Hi again, Medical Education Podcast listeners. This is Kevin Eva, the editor-in-chief of the journal. I have the pleasure today of speaking with Jed Gonzalo, who's assistant professor of medicine and public health sciences and also associate dean for health systems education at Penn State College of Medicine in Pennsylvania. The paper we'll be discussing is entitled Exploring Challenges in Implementing a Health Systems Science Curriculum, a Qualitative Analysis of Student Perceptions, and it will be released in the May 2016 issue of Medical Education. Thanks, Jed, for making the time to talk with me today.
Absolutely. Thank you for having me, Kevin.
It's my pleasure. I'm actually quite intrigued by this paper in large part because it seems to reflect an ongoing or an increasing area of conversation, I might say, which is that we come up with these grand plans for important educational strategies that are clearly important to students to understand and often find when implemented that things don't necessarily go as we originally intended. Maybe I should start before getting into any of that, though, by just asking you to clarify for anybody who doesn't use the phrase, what is health system science in your context?
I think that's a fantastic question, and the answer to that question I don't think is fully delineated as of yet within the literature, and I truly believe that it's an emerging field, and we're getting increasing clarity even on that terminology. So many folks know at least the ACGME systems-based practice competency that has been around now for well over 10 years. In the UME literature, I think it has lagged a bit behind as to what health system science or what those core concepts, knowledge, and skills would be. And through the AMA consortium, some of my role in this study in particular was funded in part by the AMA. And here at Penn State, when we launched this new curriculum that was funded by the AMA, the whole key component was health system science, which we weren't terming at the time because the term health system science didn't exist. But it included concepts and topics that many of the listeners would understand and probably do in their local environments to some degree, such as patient safety, quality, high-value care, teamwork, leadership. These are pieces of curricular components that many schools do in small pieces, perhaps. Our AMA grant and this project focus on a very comprehensive new curriculum on health system science. And it turns out a lot of the schools in the AMA consortium that came together, this is probably one of the biggest themes within that consortium, advancing the knowledge and skills to develop systems-ready physicians to enter the workforce of the 21st century. And this health system science framework, if you will, is emerging. I mean, we have a paper coming out this week in Academic Medicine that delineates the framework of health system science. And it's funny because when we submitted the paper, the title was Healthcare Delivery Science. And when we met in October as our consortium, we had a mini plenary on the terminology of healthcare delivery science. We had 20 different terms, and we kind of voted and came to health system science. So, and the new textbook that's coming out in a number of months through the consortium, again, health system science is in the title. So I think it's coming full circle. It's a comprehensive synthetic view of a lot of the learning that medical education has understood and seen. It's just collating all of these into an applied science.
And it's clear from your description that this is an emerging topic, but as you said, listeners around the world will be familiar with the notion of trying to build in the issues of patient safety and high-value care in health practice. AMA is the American Medical Association, for anybody who wasn't familiar with that acronym, and their involvement suggests that this is becoming a high-priority area for you both nationally and locally. So can you tell us a bit more about what's happening within your specific context that led to this effort to build a more formal curriculum?
Yeah, I can. I was a medical student here, I'm speaking personally now, and I graduated in 2006. And I spent a number of years away and came back in 2012. And when I returned, the curriculum was, in part, essentially the same. And I think many listeners may understand this fact that a lot of UME undergraduate medical education curriculum really focus on the basic and clinical sciences, and rightly so. It's a key critical component of the knowledge and skills for those learning areas. When I came back to Penn State just a couple of years ago, we had a new dean, Dr. Terry Wolpaw, who came from Case Western, who linked up and built this network internally of health systems leaders. And we had one foot in the local environment that said our health system leaders and our health systems are saying that we need to be advancing the knowledge and skills of our learners to be workforce ready or systems ready. And it just so happened to overlap with what many folks would acknowledge on a more national level and the national scope, particularly in the literature over the past 5 years, that suggests that our learners are not prepared when they transition out of undergraduate medical education and enter residencies to hit the ground running, if you will. They're very good, clinically astute physicians in doing the traditional diagnostics and therapeutic, but from a patient-centered lens or from understanding the health context and the health system in which our patients live and healthcare is delivered, the knowledge and skills there may be insufficient. In fact, our medical students graduating over the past 5 to 8 years, particularly through the graduation surveys done in U.S. medical schools, suggest that as well. The students were suggesting that they're getting a paucity of learning in these areas. So I think those forces kind of came together the past couple years, and Dr. Terry Wolpaw coming in kind of was the leading force in that through the grant, and that's kind of what was the driving impetus to make this significant change. The premise of the paper here and the change that we were doing was not small. This was, as you alluded to, Kevin, the grand plan. This was a grand plan for our curricular revision and is still an ongoing process.
Well, and the fact that the students were noticing the need for more work in this area is an interesting thing to juxtapose with the key focus of your results, at least in my impression. I don't want to get too far into the details of the methodology or the specifics of the curriculum, but your students did identify a number of barriers that seemed to be at least potentially generalizable issues when people start worrying about the things that might get in the way of any grand plan like the one that you're describing. You spoke with a number of medical students across various levels in the program and tried to determine how this new initiative was being taken up. Was that prompted by specific experiences that led you to worry about the barriers that students were encountering, or was this more just a general quality assurance exercise being laid on top of the efforts that you were engaging?
Yeah, I think that's a great question, Kevin. And I rewound the clock and I was reflecting on this podcast. I was thinking about the genesis of this because this is 2013 and I kind of assumed my role as leading the local efforts here. And I wasn't sure what we were wading into. This wasn't a course that was going to live in a 1 month block. This was a significant pillar. When our students walk in, and this was our vision, that they would experience our curriculum and there would be four pillars to their learning. There would be the basic sciences, the clinical sciences, humanities, which has been here in our medical school since the 60s, and the system sciences. And for that much of a significant, I don't want to call it overhaul, but curricular revision, I was a little, as an educator and an educational designer, I was a little worried about where this could go. I wanted to do it right. So it felt natural to me to try to get on the ground and understand from learners, at least at that stage in 2013 and 14, what would be the barriers that they would be seeing and challenges they would be seeing? Because I felt like if I can understand and link it to where they were, then maybe we could tailor and design the curriculum a little bit closer to connect with them, because their engagement is critically important. But I'll also add that as we were designing this, we have a great core of educators and scholars here, especially the co-authors on this paper, Paul Haydick, Barbara Blatt, and Dan Wolpaw. Even when we were brainstorming this in the beginning, we thought, you know, this is an emerging field. What we are living through right now, what we're sensing as we launch into something big and comprehensive, is not something that is just local. This is an issue and a challenge that medical educators across the world, in theory, would be dealing with if we're truly transitioning towards educational curriculum that are more aligned with educating systems-ready physicians. So we kind of approached this study as a local need, but also a national and a medical education community need, anticipating the evolving landscape. So we tried to design a lot of the questions and interview guides and our recruitment processes, and our entire study was trying to balance both of those and trying to lose our context specificity for Penn State and making it a broader generalization.
And I only alluded to some of the key findings and the barriers that you shed some light on. Can I ask you to share with our listeners the things that you found most interesting and most informative as you went through this exercise?
Yeah, and that it was fascinating doing this study. I learned a ton just by doing and analyzing the work. But, you know, students are not, they're pretty sharp, intelligent individuals. You know, the first thing we did in the study, we asked them to define systems-based practice. And we had them write it down, and we did an analysis of those results. And by and large, 70 to 80% of their comments were organ-based. They would say cardiology or respiratory physiology, and that's kind of what their focus was. But when you ask them and start having discussions, because we gave a little prompt as to what systems-based practice is after that, our students get the concepts. These are not individuals who live in a vacuum. These are very technologically savvy group of people, and they understand healthcare. They understand what's going on out in the world of insurance and the challenges, and they get on the perfect value-based care. They understand that these are emerging forces within their career and profession that they're in. So it's this juxtaposition of them understanding that they should be acquiring knowledge and skills in health system sciences and patient experience. They can grasp that concept, and they reported that in the results, and your readers will see that they see the benefits to it. But once they're in this culture or this routine of medical education and the College of Medicine, particularly here, they are experiencing a number of barriers and influential factors that kind of are competing with what those potential benefits are. And the first is the medical board licensing exam. One of the students commented on that this is their currency. And they said, you know, we understand, we acknowledge, we kind of need to have knowledge and skills of these health system sciences, but our life right now is about the boards. When we come in, we have to do really well on our board exams. We have to do well on our shelf exams. We have to do well on our grades, and that's going to get us into the best residency possible. And even though we acknowledge these things are important, we're fighting this. This is the path that we're in because this is the culture or system that's been designed for us. So I think that's what kind of culminated in the figure in the manuscript. We titled it Medical Student Competing Agendas, but I refer to these two pillars, Kevin, very often. And as it turns out, after we did the study, in many ways we found this to be definitely true in reality as we developed and launched this. But the students have their priorities that follow this course of basic and clinical sciences, grade and board exams to get into the best residency. But they also have this acknowledgement and awareness of these other priorities that they want to balance these four sciences or four pillars of education. They want to develop patient-centered skills, and they want to become the best physician possible. But oftentimes, these are at odds. They're not one in and of the same, and they're kind of challenged and placed in a little bit of a difficult position to maybe know or engage or link up with the educational programs that we're doing that is more comprehensive and all-encompassing.
Did you gain any insights from these focus groups and your other explorations as to how educators might better take into account those priorities and how you might grapple with the situation where you're trying to do something important that is new and therefore won't be represented in some of those more explicit and extraneous reward structures that previously exist?
Yeah, I think that's the million-dollar question, at least one of them in this area, I think, because we have not cracked this nut, if you will, and we haven't mastered this yet. We're 2 years into the program, and we're able to talk to a number of the schools through the consortium. And my anecdotal experience is that I think a number of schools are challenged with this. We did a number of things locally based upon these results that we learned from this. We learned locally a lot from these results, and we've tried to tailor these things, but we haven't mastered any of it, to be honest. We're getting there, and it's a continuous improvement cycle, but, you know, for example, starting the course and curriculum, setting the expectations very clearly and acknowledging that this is our vision and our mission as a medical education program that addresses all these four pillars of medical education, and not taking an opaque view of the fact that the board exams are one of the drivers of their work. We know that. Educators know that this is how students will approach much of their work. So we've tried to be more transparent in this juxtaposition that we acknowledge that you're studying for the boards and shelf exams. We also believe that this is important. So one of the tangible things that we did, one of the things the students do with our first week of school here, they work on an oath. They work in their small groups and they reflect on their professional trajectory and they develop an oath for their career. And in that oath, to our good fortune, I guess, a lot of what they're describing in the oath all across all groups is this holistic, be the best physician possible for patients and populations of patients. So we try to revisit what their oath was, what they were saying from their heart and minds as they started medical school, and we try to revisit that along the way to try to keep it fresh in their mind that they came to medical school and to the profession for a reason, whatever those reasons are, and what we're trying to do with the health system sciences and maybe even humanities and other things that are not well represented on the boards, that we're trying to align our educational program with what they believe is in their oath for their profession. And sometimes that works, many times it doesn't, and we're trying other things and we're trying to do that the best we can, but it's not mastered because as an educator, we're often under that influence ourselves. I'm forced on an every week basis to try to figure out how much pre-reading should be designed into this session because they have an organ system block exam the next week, and I got to factor those things in because I know by and large many medical students will prioritize those other classes above this one. So I have to have the results of this study always the underpinnings of what we're thinking about.
Yeah, thank you for your honesty around that. This is one of the big issues, as you said, and had you suggested that it was something that you had mastered, likely would have sounded overly facile, because I suspect this might be one of those things that we simply can't master, and you just need to remain, as you said, transparent and remind people of their commitment and continue to be aware as educators that what we think is important isn't the only priority and never will be the only priority that students are chasing.
Right.
For some of the details, I'm going to refer people back to the paper just to make this a reasonably brief podcast. But as I said, I do greatly appreciate your time. And more generally, as I started with, I appreciate you continuing to raise awareness and keep these issues in the public spotlight, so to speak, so that we as a community of educators can continue to think about how to innovate and drive things forward while recognizing that there are going to be a number of other competing forces. The paper that we've been discussing, I'll just remind our listeners, is entitled Exploring Challenges in Implementing a Health System Science Curriculum, a Qualitative Analysis of Student Perceptions. And I've been speaking with Jed Gonzalo, who's the first author of the article, which will be released in May 2016. Any final words, Jed, before we wrap up?
No, I appreciate this opportunity very much. Thank you.
Oh, it's been a pleasure. Good luck with this and with everything still to come.
Thank you.